So, as Femi noted, it is 7 years after September 11th, 2001, the beginning of the war on terror. Lots happened since. We're thinking and asking the question, what if we went back to that day, what would have happened, for instance, if we hadn't done anything militarily in response? Is that even possible to think about? Here's another what if.
My name is Mark Gaffer. I'm calling from Norfolk, Massachusetts. Grew up in New York City with the Twin Towers in view from my bedroom window. And now when I return home to New York to visit my parents, who still live in the same place, can't look out the window anymore because I don't want to. I want to remember the Twin Towers in view the way that they always used to be.
Thank you, Mark. You can reach us, too. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org. Jonah Lehrer joins us, editor-at-large for Steed magazine. Jonah, at a moment like this, and you can hear in Mark's voice there a sense of remembrance that's going on this day, are human beings particularly suggestible? Are their brains open to all kinds of experiences that you might not have in such a in another more ordinary moment of memory?
Absolutely. Scientists have done a lot of work studying flashbulb memories, which are memories that are charged with this kind of emotional resonance. And 9/11 is very much a flashbulb memory. I remember, you know, I can spell out the exact details of the scene when I learned about the Twin Towers. But studies of these flashbulb memories, which seem so visceral, so detailed, so cinematic, they turn out to be no more accurate than any other kind of memory. And there's been a lot of research documenting just how dishonest, how inherently dishonest our memories really are.
Now, are they more strongly etched in the brain? Is that how they're stored? Or are they just stored in a different place, which makes them more vivid?
They're not more strongly etched or stored in a different place. They seem to be stored like any other memory. It's just they have the strong emotional component attached to them. So they're like a normal memory plus this strong sense of emotion. And so that's why even though they're no more accurate than any other kind of memory, the best-known study has actually been done with the Challenger and showed that when people kind of had these strong memories of where they were when they learned that the Challenger had exploded.
The 1986 disaster, right?
Exactly. Yep. Those memories turn out to not be true on the whole. So even though these memories feel so true, so sincere, so powerful, they turn out to be no more accurate than a normal memory. It's just that they have these strong emotions, generally an emotion of fear that comes with them.
Oh, that's absolutely fascinating. But we should remember, I mean, people will be gathering today to actually explore and to trigger those emotional responses and those memories. President Bush is going to start today with a moment of silence at the White House in about an hour from now at 8:46 a.m., the exact time the first jetliner slammed into the World Trade Center. Also, for the first time since June, John McCain and Barack Obama will appear together. Before they speak at Columbia University, the candidates this afternoon plan to visit Ground Zero together for a wreath-laying ceremony. And family and friends of those killed on September 11th are also there, too, filing into the site at this moment. And joining us now live from Ground Zero is WNYC's Arun Venugopal. Good morning.
Hi, John.
Well, can you set the scene for us? What's going on now? Have you talked with anyone?
Yeah, I've been speaking to a few people. I'm sitting on Church Street right in front of the Millennium Hotel and facing Ground Zero. You can't really see anything, actually, because it's all kind of encased in chain link fence and tarp. You can just see all the cranes which are rising over the site. But you can see people in front of me who are kind of streaming by towards the venue, checking into there's a reader's check-in site. So some of the people who are going to be reading today, their family members, brothers, sisters, what have you, people who died that day. But others are students from the countries which lost people that day. So I spoke with one gentleman. He's from New Jersey. And so, you know, he's clutching his list of names and getting used to the idea that of pronouncing all these names and alternating with a student from Egypt who will be reading alongside him. So you just have all the kind of people from the area who are streaming in who might be just working here alongside people who are actually going to be part of the ceremony.
And there's a real ritual in the 7 years since 9/11 of people coming to the site and doing very specific things, even though it is, as you say, a hole in the ground with a lot of chain link fence around it.
Yeah, and actually the difference this year is that it's not being held in the pit. And so that's kind of throwing a bit of a curve to some people. They like that sense of ritual, as you're suggesting. And for them, the fact that it's going to be held nearby, adjacent to Zuccotti Park, which is right next to Century 21, you know, they understand that things happen, the construction has to happen, but they still would prefer, at least a couple people I've spoken to about that, that it happened in the same exact way it's happened every year, because for them that itself is there's a sanctity to that process, that unchanging kind of quality.
Well, you're going to be there all day. I guess there is a specific set of remembrances that correspond to the times that were so important 7 years ago, but then the candidates will arrive sometime after that. Can you take us through the day?
Yeah, well, you have at about 8:40 is when the ceremony is set to start, a little less than an hour from now, and you're going to have these bagpipers and other musicians who kind of guide the World Trade Center flag up to the stage, and then you're going to have Mayor Bloomberg sort of announcing, introducing this the moment of silence that happens at 8:46 when the first plane hit, and after that, you're going to have the names of the people, as I mentioned, a little over 100 pairs of people who will take turns reading the names, and they will stop at each. There are four moments of silence overall, the times when each of the towers were hit and then when each of them came down. And so they will pause. There will, I think I'm told that there will be bells ringing at churches and other religious institutions throughout the city to mark those moments, but here it will be silent for each of those moments. And then it'll wind up at around 12:30, I guess, when all the names have been read.
All right, Arun Venugopal, WNYC reporter, thanks for joining us live from Ground Zero.
Thank you, John.
Jonah Lehrer, in the final moments of this hour, I guess it's a fairly powerful metaphor given what we've been talking about. Here's this empty space, and people are looking into it, and it's not so much what they're seeing, but the memories they're evoking out of that emptiness within themselves that's what's going on here today.
Yes, and in that emptiness, everyone sees something different. We're not all experiencing, even though it's the same date and it's the same event, each of us relives a slightly different 9/11.
And that's a fascinating experience that has a neurological base in the brain.
As does every other experience.
Right. But, you know, not to just sort of trivialize it scientifically, I mean, if you were to do MRIs of what's going on with people today, it would actually be very, very different than what happens on other days, right?
I think so. I think you'd see, you know, it's a very emotional day for just about everybody. I think you'd see all these emotional circuits, all these primal circuits. It's a stew of fear and loss, you know, and these emotions definitely influence the way we think on days like today.
Well, we've talked about all of it in this hour. Thanks so much for joining us, Jonah.
Thanks so much for having me.
And thanks for helping me out with all the transitions. You did a hell of a job. There's a lot of ways you can catch up with us at The Takeaway. You can go to Facebook, Friend Feed, Twitter, our own website, thetakeaway.org. 7 years after September 11, we're following that conversation. A lot of debate about the success or failure of the war on terror. And we're asking you, what if we go back to that day? What would have happened if really nothing had been the aftermath, if we had not responded in the way that we did? Also, how do you explain to kids what happened on that day 7 years ago? Elena in Brooklyn has to deal with the issue in one special way.
I have to remember September 11th a little differently than some, and I'd like to say what I'm about to say for all the parents out there. Although we obviously know what September 11th means, it also happens to be my child's birthday. And so I have to also remember that September 11th for me and my family is a very happy day.
And here's your takeaway for this hour.
One interesting implication of a lot of this research is that if you want your product to taste better, it's a very simple thing to do. Just make it more expensive.
And that's what we did with Cheerios here in the studio. That was Jonah Lehrer, editor-at-large for Seed Magazine and author of Proust, was a neuroscientist helping me out all hour. He says it's time to rethink notions like you get what you pay for. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.